Hey there, thanks for joining me on this edition of Fit Friends Happy Hour. My name is Katie Hake and I'm your host. This is episode 137 and today we are talking with Casey Zavaleta, fitness professional and host of the How Do You Feel podcast. Now, when I learned Casey's favorite exercises were box jumps, deadlifts, and pull-ups, I just knew it was meant to be. And it turns out that she is from the Midwest, which we discovered after the fact that we started talking, and she has ties to Indy, so hello, hashtag destiny. We are talking about all things strength training specifically for women, but Casey also gets pretty vulnerable and shares her own story with disordered eating and body dysmorphia and how she really found fitness to transform her life and now how she's doing that to help empower other women. It's a great conversation. Grab a cup of coffee, grab a margarita. You're going to feel like you're just chatting with some girlfriends because she's awesome. So highly encourage you to check out her podcast as well. Put that in your rotation, the How Do You Feel podcast, because she also brings on experts in sleep, exercise, nutrition, wellness, like all the things to help you be a better version of you. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fierce. Casey, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Katie. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited.
So excited to have you on the show today. I found Casey just through looking through other podcasts and just trying to find more people like me, like us, who listen to the show. And I stumbled upon her and her page and I was like, we are so similar. I feel like she speaks my language. And then I watched one of your intro videos where you said your favorite exercise was deadlifts and pull-ups and box jumps. And I was like, done. She has to be on the podcast. Like she gets it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe kind of share your story of how you got into fitness.
Yeah, awesome. I'd love to. I am a functional strength coach. So I teach the fundamentals of strength training to people of all ages. I do that in the personal training environment and then also in group classes. And then I'm the head of a program that's called Strong Academy that I run with the company I work with called All Day Fit. And I'm sure we'll talk lots about Strong Academy as we go on. It's an amazing program. But I'm also a nutritional therapy practitioner in training. So I'm currently in a course and I'll be completing that in May. Like you said, I'm also a podcast host, I guess podcast producer, because I do all of my own editing and producing. And then maybe more importantly, I am a wife and a dog mom to a beautiful golden retriever. Oh, so
what's your golden retriever's name?
Molly.
Oh, that's so cute.
And she's about a year and a half. She's the sweetest thing in the whole world.
So Casey and I, we can relate wearing lots of different hats. And I'm sure we'll dive into this a little bit more, but I know you also have your own story kind of with disordered eating and body dysmorphia. So can you share a little bit about just kind of your history with where it is that you've been with both food and your body?
Yeah, definitely. I grew up as a dancer and dancing is a wonderful thing for a lot of reasons. It really made me very in tune with movement and fall in love with movement. But you also spend a lot of time looking at yourself in the mirror and trying to create certain shapes with your body, having coaches look at you and critique you based on your body. So I think probably stemming from my dancing background, I definitely just became very aware growing up of my body and the size and shape that it was being in that environment. So that kind of led into undiagnosed anorexia when I was in high school, but I was definitely very, very unhealthy and very, very restrictive with my eating patterns. And it really was stemming around me just trying to fit into the mold of what I thought a dancer was supposed to look like. And I think for a lot, similar to a lot of people's stories, it's a way to exude some control over your life. So there were some things I was going through with my family. My parents were going through a divorce. And my dad came out as gay when I was in high school. So there was like a lot going on. And I think that was something that I could have control over and something for me to really focus on. So I went to Indiana University, which is fun. Go Hoosiers. From Indy.
We allow her on the podcast because she's from Indiana. I'm a Boilermaker.
You went to Purdue, didn't you?
I went to Purdue, no. But I work with IU now. So like, it's all good. We'll let it slide.
Okay. Okay. We'll wave the white flag on this one. Cool. When I went to school, that kind of morphed from only restricting into the cycle of binging and purging. I think that my willpower sort of reached a point where I couldn't just restrict anymore, but I was still trying to exude so much control, right, over what I was eating and over my body. So in school, there were better periods with that and worse periods with that, but my self-worth at the time was entirely tied to the size of my body.
I have a question. I don't want to interrupt you, but so did you find at this point in your life, right, because you mentioned like high school, it was undiagnosed. And looking back now, you can recognize, yes, I for sure had anorexia nervosa. Once you were in this college, kind of this new transition, you mentioned kind of more of the binge eating. Was this something that you were seeking help with or that you even knew what it was at the time?
That's a great question. And no, unfortunately, it was not something that I sought help for. And it's interesting because looking back, it feels so obvious, right? It's easy to say that I should have gone and found help, but I was really in a state of denial about it. I wasn't admitting to myself, even as these behaviors were going on, I wasn't admitting to myself that I had an eating disorder, which is crazy how we can create such separation between like what we identify with versus what our behaviors are. But unfortunately, I didn't go seek help. I very much wish that I had. Because obviously that would have kickstarted my healing journey, but I wasn't ready for it. And I think that's one of the things with these disorders, the person has to approach with some level of readiness that no one else can impose on them when they are ready and want to heal. So healing for me was quite a process. I currently no longer identify with my eating disorder, although I don't like to not talk about it. This is something that I've somewhat recently really started talking about and sharing openly. And I think that that's so important to understand it, right? Because it is a big part of my past.
We'll put the link to the episode where you kind of go a little bit deeper into your story. And, you know, we talked about this last week on your podcast about just how even as fitness professionals, right? Because you were studying exercise science at IU. It's like, even though we're so close to it, sometimes we don't even recognize the patterns and the behaviors that we're going through. So,
yeah. So I just want to hop in. Okay. I actually didn't study exercise science at IU. I studied neuroscience and I studied dance. So at this point, I didn't actually know that I wanted to be a fitness instructor or fitness professional. That came a little bit later, but I definitely was still in the dancing environment. And then also studying neuroscience.
So you kind of read my mind. Sorry, neuroscience, science, all the science, all the things. So at what point kind of through college and as you started kind of this healing process, what did that look like kind of after your early years of graduation and how did that kind of shift into fitness?
Yeah, so there were a lot of steps along the way. It certainly didn't all happen at once. I think it was very, very gradual. And it happened, I think I just reached a point where I realized that this striving for a certain kind of body and a certain like level of aesthetic fitness, I guess, it just wasn't fulfilling me. I wasn't happy. I didn't have the deep, close relationships that I wanted to have in my life. It felt very guilt-driven and secretive, and it just, I wasn't mentally in a place that I was proud of or that I wanted to be in. And so I think that you start to realize that, and then slowly but surely, you start to seek out things that do feel better. And so I found a community, a fitness community that values things other than how you look. And I think being surrounded by coaches and other people in fitness that were talking differently than I'd ever heard people talk, and they weren't just talking about weight loss, and they were talking about the bigger picture of how you feel. I think being around that, I slowly started to experiment with those concepts in my own life and then understand them for myself. And since I've really taken on a philosophy of, well, my podcast is called How Do You Feel? But taken on a philosophy of dialing in to what makes you feel good instead of being so driven by the aesthetics.
I love that. Just, I get goosebumps because talking about just the environment and that the feel, right? Because it's so much more than the aesthetic. But I also just want to kind of commend you for just verbalizing and saying, yes, I wish I would have gotten help with my eating disorder, but now you can kind of recognize like, that's where I was and that's what I went through, because I think that's just, it sounds so much easier said than done.
Yeah, for sure. I think no matter what, like you're never going to be able to revolutionize your life in a day or a week, right? Like these changes and striving to really have healthy, sustainable behaviors, which is something that I fully strive for now in my life and my clients, it happens little by little, and you have to give yourself a little bit of grace in that. You're not just going to go from one day hating your body and being really critical of it to the next day finding yourself loving your body. Like it's just, that doesn't happen. That takes, some people never get there, but it takes years and years, right, to make these changes. So I think, you know, I'll always advocate for people going to get help, and I'm not proud that I didn't, but yeah, at the same time, everyone's at a different point in that journey and a different level of readiness to change.
Yeah, that readiness to change is huge. And I work with this a lot with clients too, about helping them to recognize like, yes, you may have been at this stage of your life that you're of course not happy with, you're not proud of, but like you said, with all that you were going through high school, like that was your way of coping. That was your way of dealing with it, you know? And sometimes you almost have to have that compassion and that perspective to go, my body, yes, I was treating it like crap, but it helped me survive. Like I'm here, I'm on the other side of it, which I think is a testimony in itself.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's easy to look back and say, you know, oh, I can't believe I let it get to that, or I can't believe I lost so many years to my eating disorder, or I don't know. Just think of it so negatively, but at the same time, I have such a fuller appreciation for the fact that I don't think that way anymore and don't feel that way. And I have a much greater capacity to understand and relate to clients and other people that are going through similar struggles, because I think many of us have some kind of story with challenging feelings about our body and disordered eating. So I'm grateful that I'm able to come now with a background and an understanding of what it's like to be in that place, because it's not fun.
With that being said, how has your own story kind of influenced your approach and just your philosophy to training, right? It sounds like you, out of college, you found this community. How did that shift kind of over the years into you being in the shoes of the trainer?
Yeah. Well, fitness at first for me was, I had a very disordered relationship with it, and it was very much based on what can I do to change my body so that it looks the way I want? And it was very tied into what I was eating and, you know, what was my level of activity compared to the amount that I was eating. And, you know, I thought of if I had eaten something that I didn't think was okay the night before, I had to make up for it with exercise. Like it was just all very, very warped. And the way that I see it now is movement is a pillar in my life that helps me to feel good and helps keep my body and my mind as healthy as it can possibly be. Movement for me, I mean, from a young age, I've always loved it, but I really do feel my best when I'm active, but it's not something that I'm using to change the way that I look at all anymore. I value looking at the big picture of wellness, which we talked about when you were on my podcast a little bit, because I know you feel the same. And it's not just about fitness and nutrition. It's about the whole picture of your mental well-being and your relationships and your ability to deal with stress and how are you sleeping and how's your sexual health and all, like how are your relationships with your family? Do you feel safe? All of these things, right? All of these things matter. So for me now, training is just one piece of that puzzle and one piece that helps me feel not in control of, but that helps me have some command, I guess, over all of those things in my life. I think it's so important that fitness is sustainable in your life. So that it's not about quick fixes and what can we do for 30 days to get to a certain point. Like, I'm all about setting goals, but the habits that you create, they have to be sustainable. Otherwise, what's the point? What are we doing? We're falling on and off the wagon all the time, right?
You can tell your philosophy just in the words that you use. I love that you even just introduce yourself as a functional movement mm-hmm. and just replacing that word exercise with movement, I think makes such a shift in mm-hmm. our perspective around exercise. So did you find as you were working through your eating disorder and kind of this relationship with exercise, well, you mentioned that you transferred a lot of it to exercise, but did you find yourself on that far end of the spectrum with exercise too? And how did you get to where you are?
Was I overtraining?
Yeah.
Yeah. Short answer is definitely. Yeah. So I was definitely in a mindset of training 6 or 7 days a week for like an hour and a half, probably every day. It was very cardio driven. It was very high intensity. I had to burn a certain number of calories. I don't love talking this way because I know that these things are very triggering for a lot of people mm-hmm. that are dealing with these problems, but that was very much my headspace, and it was never miss a workout. Like, if I have the busiest day in the world, it doesn't matter. I'm getting up at 5 a.m. because I have to fit my workout in before, right? Or else I'm not in a good headspace for the day. Like, I feel like I haven't done enough and I feel like I failed. Like, you know.
Then their sister.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a stressful place to be in, right? Like, now, just to contrast that, to explain like what my schedule is like now. Now I strength train 4 times a week. I don't do high intensity things. If I do quote unquote cardio, it's like because I'm doing a kettlebell complex or animal flow, which I've been having so much fun with lately.
So fun. Tell people what animal flow is because not everybody knows.
So I'm not a certified animal flow instructor. I haven't actually taken the course. I've just been kind of dabbling because some of my friends have. But animal flow, it kind of looks like you're dancing, but it's a set of movements, and they all have names that relate to animals, most of them, like the scorpion and the bear and all this stuff. But you basically string them together into a series of movements. And it's meant to be a very functional movement. Like, it's all body weight. It's a body weight exercise. But it's very fun. And for me, it feels like I'm dancing. So I kind of tap into that love for movement when I do animal flow. I love doing things that I feel like actually translate to life. And that's where the functional piece of it comes in. I don't care anymore to do intervals on the treadmill because that doesn't really make me better at anything in life. It just gives me knee pain, you know, or it used to, right? So like, yeah, that's kind of where I am now. Yeah.
That's hilarious. I love that. So with this kind of shift, you know, that you've had personally with fitness, let's talk about it from that aspect, right? Because you work with a lot, all ages, but a lot of women. Where do you find that women struggle in terms of mindset? And I have this talk a lot with clients and both on the podcast of finding this line of giving yourself grace versus excuses.
Yeah. I think that if you're making excuses, quote unquote, like you're missing workouts, you're not showing up, I think that's your opportunity to look at what else is going on in your life that's not allowing you to show up for yourself. Well, first of all, do you enjoy what you're showing up for? Because I can preach about functional strength training all I want, but if you hate strength training, the way I'm explaining it, right? There are many different forms of quote unquote strength training, but the way I would coach it or the way I would explain it, if you hate it, I'm never going to be able to force you to show up, right? You have to do something that you actually enjoy doing or else it's not going to happen. But if that's not the problem and it's not the movement piece that you're not enjoying, what else is going on in your life? Are your stress levels through the roof to the point where you have to take a hard look at your schedule and what's sustainable for you so that you can show up for yourself? Or is sleep falling to the wayside? Are you getting 5 hours of sleep a night so you can't show up, right? So I think that that's your opportunity to look at what other changes can I make in order to allow fitness to be a priority in my life.
That's such a great way. I just had this like epiphany as you were talking of almost changing the verbiage, right? Like how we're talking about changing the words you use from exercise to movement. What if we even just change that word excuse to barrier, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we peel back the layers, it's not necessarily an excuse. It's something that's getting in your way. Like you said, that's causing you to not want to show up or, you know.
Yeah, I love that. I think that that's an amazing way to put it. Yeah, I love that word.
You mentioned previously, you talked about the program, the Strong Academy. So tell us a little bit more about that. And correct me if I'm wrong. Did you create it or like how was this born?
So I work for a company called All Day Fit. And the founder and CEO of that, her name is Cassie Day. And I've worked closely with her to create this program that I'm now the head of. So I can't say it was definitely a team effort to create this program. And it's gone through many iterations and there have been, you know, a lot of people that have been in on making it what it is now, but it's an awesome program. It's a 3-month strength training program, although we have clients that complete many rounds. It's not like a one and done kind of thing, but we do them for 3 months at a time. And we basically teach you the fundamentals of strength training. So we take you through a proper strength training program where you're writing down your exercises, your weights, your reps, your sets, and teaching you how to progressively overload yourself from week to week. So it's for newbies to learn the fundamentals of how to squat, deadlift, push, pull, carry, like do all these things that are so fundamental to living life. We've also had trainers come and do the program because, you know, it really does cater to all levels. Which is one of the things that we're really proud of in creating a space that's a team environment for people of all different experience levels, all different backgrounds, all different ages to all come and train together. So it's a pretty powerful program.
Getting women, people, humans, but specifically women to get behind a barbell, like I could talk about that for days because I think it's so important. Like you said, there's so many aspects to it that are not just functional, but just empowering. So with that being said, what are some of the common myths around strength training for women? Or where do you find that people are hesitant to join a program like yours?
I think the one that you hear all the time is that women don't want to get bulky, quote unquote.
It's like we hear this all the time. And I feel like we always talk about that as the myth, but why are we still talking about it? Because it's
100%. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, does that mean that you don't want to look strong? Like, I don't fully understand what that means. Like, strength is functional and empowering. But, you know, the thing that I would say to that is that it would have to be such an obsession in your life for you to become bulky from strength training. Like, if you're doing it in a healthy, sustainable way. Like for women, we just don't have the hormones and we're not eating enough to like bulk up. I think like people are thinking about it. So I don't know. It is funny that people are still talking about it because it's just not a thing. Like you should want to be strong to live your life well, to live your life pain-free. And I don't know why we're so worried about getting bulky.
Pain-free. That's another area that I feel like is not talked about enough. With movement, especially, you know, from a group fitness standpoint, group fitness is often focused on the high intensity, the fun factor, which is great, but I feel like it misses a lot of these different areas. Like you talked about functionality, no pain. Like that is such a fundamental part of life.
Yeah. Yeah. I could go off on like a tangent, so I'm going to limit myself on this one. But yeah, I do not understand why people go to classes and just continue to work out and train through pain and beat themselves up. Like strength training should be the thing that allows you to move pain-free in your life. So we always preach, don't train through pain. If something is going on, then let's understand the cause of it. If you need mobility, if you need to strengthen something, like let's understand it, but never, never should you train through pain, especially in group classes. But you're right, it happens all the time.
That is another area of the program you guys created that I was just like, oh my gosh, yes, yes, these girls get it. Like we need to connect. Is you do focus a lot on corrective movements and mobility work. So explain to people a little bit more about what are corrective exercises? What is mobility work? What does that include? And why is it such a fundamental piece of movement?
Yeah. So At its core, mobility is important because you need to have a certain range of motion in certain joints to move properly in your life. So we have all of these things that we do in our daily lives. You need to be able to have enough mobility in your hips, for example, to be able to sit down on the toilet and then stand up while maintaining a neutral spine. So if we don't have enough mobility in that joint to keep a neutral spine, things are going to start to go wrong. So you're going to end up with pain in your lower back or in your knee. And then when we do these things over and over and over multiple times a day on a daily basis, we start to end up with these injuries or with chronic pain. So mobilizing your joints to be able to move through a range of motion that's going to contribute to your activities of daily living is very important. So that's the mobility piece. But then there's also this strength, like corrective exercise stability piece that you're talking about, where you also need to have enough strength and stability around your joints to actually control those ranges of motion. So we see this a lot, right? So we're all texting all the time. So our heads are in a forward position, right? And they end up there because we're shortening the muscles in the front of our neck, lengthening the ones in the back by staying in that position, texting all the time and looking down. So in that scenario, we need corrective exercises. Well, first we need mobility to actually lengthen the muscles in the front of the neck to get our head back into a correct position. And then we need to strengthen the muscles in the back of our neck and in our back to hold our head in that proper alignment, in that proper position. Hopefully that was a clear way to explain it, but basically mobility and stability and corrective exercise, trust me, when you're 70, like you're going to care about them because that's what's going to keep you moving well at that point.
Yeah, I love that. And it's such a key piece. And I just love learning more and educating clients on like, just if you can move better, how much better you're going to feel, not just now, but it's like respecting older you. It's respecting the future you in 20, 30 years that hopefully won't feel the pain that most people feel.
Yeah, exactly.
So what advice would you have to somebody? Let's kind of go back to your story a little bit. What advice would you have to somebody? Maybe you've had a client like this who maybe has this history of dieting and negative body image and fears in the gym, or you know, they find that some of this stuff is so triggering. What advice would you have to that person to get to the gym, to start strength training, but like for them, they can't even get to the gym or get out of that high intensity group fitness boutique place that they've been going?
Right. I think finding the right environment is key. So you have to find a place where the language isn't about dieting, where it's a body positive environment and that's really encouraged. And I know that can be hard to find, especially in some of the more traditional commercial fitness spaces or in group class environments, but it is so important to put yourself in the right environment, especially if you have a history with disordered eating or you're having some body image struggles. The other thing I would say if you're feeling really unsure is hire a personal trainer. And I know that that is a very expensive thing for a lot of people, but even if it's short term and even if it's just to get you in the door and give you a little bit of confidence with the equipment to understand what it feels like to squat properly, to understand what it feels like to pick up a bar properly, like, can we get some of these fundamentals in place so that you feel the confidence to then be able to navigate that environment for yourself? I think is really important. I believe that everyone starting off on their fitness journey should hire a personal trainer. Honestly, there's nothing else like it. And find someone that is good at working with beginners, right? Don't hire the person that's working with professional athletes. Like, hire someone that understands teaching fundamental movement patterns to people who have never been in the gym before.
Yeah, that's so true. You don't have to hire the advanced master senior level trainer who's expecting you to work together twice a week, three times a week for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Talking about the environment, what are some things, maybe some red flags, or how does somebody know this is not the right environment? I need to get out. I need to find something that is more conducive to this feeling that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Any place that's advertising a 30-day challenge or 30-day quick fix or like some sort of period of time that they're guaranteeing you something, I would definitely run away from that. Any place that's talking about how many calories you can burn in a certain amount of time or the transformation that you're going to see, the before and afters, like any place that's fixated on that kind of lingo, it's very diet culture based, diet culture centric. Those are the spaces that I would stay away from. Places that I would gravitate towards are spaces that are talking about how you feel, your energy being good, strength, setting goals that are more like process oriented and behavioral oriented and pattern oriented, or are more about you as a person and things that you want to achieve and that you want in your life. Those are the things that I would look for in a gym or any kind of program.
That's such a great point. I didn't even think of that. You don't even have to actually go to the gym. You can just simply look at their advertising and what are they putting on social media? What are they promoting on their website that will give you I think with gyms, it's pretty clear. Like you can yeah. see what they're about and what they're not about just by what they put out there and how they attract people.
For sure. And is there diversity of bodies and backgrounds and ages? And, you know, I don't want to go somewhere with one type of look, right? Especially all over their advertising. Like, are they showcasing different kinds and sizes and shapes of bodies? Because I think that that's really important too. We have to start actually showing the diversity of humans more, like in all of these spaces.
That's so true. I actually used to work with a smaller studio and I didn't even realize it because I'm so in it. But you bring up a huge point that specific studio did not have. There was no diversity. I hate to say it, but you could pinpoint out the two people in that class who were not like the other people, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think of somebody coming in as an outsider. I think part of us, we go, oh, that's what I want. I want to look like all these other people. And sometimes I feel like that's the initial draw to get into some of those places, right? It's like everybody wears the branded clothes, they've got this certain body type. But I think once you're in it, then it's like, it puts you not in a good place mentally.
Yeah, I think it's just placed on too high of a pedestal, right? Mm-hmm. Like people think they want it or think that they're seeking it out because they think that's going to bring them some level of acceptance and happiness, and then it doesn't, right? So like, I don't know if it's that they inherently want it or that the world teaches them that they should want it, but either way, like, you're right. And yeah, it's striving for something that is pointless. It has no value.
Yeah. Diversity. I love that. Just looking for that because it's so important. And not only just in fitness, but you know, if we're talking about that community, it's like other people, other shapes, sizes, backgrounds, stories that we can learn from in just so many other aspects. So you work at the Cutest Studio. Like, I'm so jealous that it's in Toronto. I'm like, please move it to Indianapolis. I'll work there. So it looks like you have an awesome team. So tell us, you know, what advice do you have for people who are working with a team or finding a community that you love? Because the client in particular, but also like I find this way as a fitness professional, like how do you find that group of people that you just get and you click with and it's fun to go to work every day?
Yeah, it's hard. And it's definitely not always the case. I just believe that the spaces that you spend the most time in should lift you up and empower you and make you feel good. And yes, that relates to the gym, but it also relates to any job, like any work environment that you have. Like, I think that is just, you spend so much time there and with those people. I think that's just a fundamental part of making sure that you're in a good headspace, right? And I also think that people don't take enough ownership over that. Like, you have the power to make a change if you're not in that environment. And I watch a lot of people who are very passive about it and just assume that they can't do anything about it. These people and these places are out there. So I can genuinely say that every single person on my team, I look up to them in some way. Like, I want to embody aspects of them and who they are for all different reasons, right? But every single person that I work with and all the trainers, like, I genuinely feel that way about. So what a cool opportunity for me every day to go to get to work with those people and to learn from them in some way all the time. So I would just encourage people to not be passive, like take ownership over it and over yourself and over how you're spending your time, and seek out that place that does lift you up and make you feel really good.
Yeah, don't be passive. I love that, especially when it comes to our environment. It's so easy to just go through, this is the place I work, this is what I do. Like, we don't realize how much of an impact that it really can have on us.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, so good. Well, I feel like we could talk forever. Your definition of Fit Friends Happy Hour. So we love to dream big on Fit Friends Happy Hour. So tell us, like, what's next for Casey? Where do you see yourself in, I don't know, 5, 10 years? If you're like me, you're like, I cannot think 10 years ahead. Give me like 2, 3 years. But what is it that you're working on now? Or what are some of your big goals?
Yeah, that's a good question. You're right. It is hard to really picture what 5 years will look like. And part of the reason for that is my husband plays soccer professionally here in Toronto. And so we've lived in Toronto for 5 or 6 years now, but he is on the last year of his contract with Toronto. So whether they renegotiate at the end of the year or he signs a contract somewhere else, we don't really know where we're going to be living in a year from now.
Is that obviously exciting or anxious, or how are you feeling?
Oh, all the emotions. It's very sad to think about potentially leaving Toronto because I love the community that I have here. I love the city, like so many things that I call this place home now. So it's hard to think about leaving for sure. But it has to be laced with a bit of excitement about what are the possibilities of where we could go and getting to explore a new city and reach new people, all of that good stuff. So I don't know, things that are on my mind, like I've always thought about going back to school in a more extensive way. Like right now I'm in this nutritional therapy practitioner program, but I thought about going back for naturopathic medicine. I picture kids in our future, so we'll see what happens there. I don't know, like there are just so many variables. And I think that the second that I sit down and try to write my 5-year plan, I kind of drive myself insane because there's too much up in the air, right? You can't do it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that wherever I go, I am either searching for, or if it's not there, creating a community similar to the one that I found in Toronto, because it's actually changed my life. And I wouldn't want to live anywhere without that.
Oh, I love that. And I don't know if you're like me, you kind of still think you're 20. It's hard to plan. You're like, yeah, kids soon, but in your head, it feels like so much further, which when you're also like, wait, it's not that far away. So right. It sounds like you're really just enjoying the season that you're at, which is okay too, right? Like that's just as important as goal setting.
Yeah, for sure.
Love that. Okay. And what's the best thing that's happened to you this week?
The best thing that's happened to me this week.
It's only Tuesday, but we can talk about last week too.
Right. We're going to have to extend back to last Tuesday. Well, we just launched we're holding an event in 2 weeks and I'm really excited about. So I don't know what the dates are like in the States, but here in Canada, February 1st launches National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. So we're having an event. We're having a therapist that works with disordered eating and body image issues. And we're going to have her and we're going to have a conversation. I'm going to share my story with the people that come and we're going to have a conversation about these struggles. And I think it's going to be like, we have some really special things planned. I think it's going to be a really special space. So we launched that, which is really exciting because I'm excited to have that conversation over the week. I think it's going to be an important topic.
That's so exciting. And I think that's no coincidence. So I just want to thank you, you know, from the bottom of my heart for being vulnerable, for sharing your story, you know, not just on your podcast, but, you know, here's a guest. And I think the more we can talk about it, the more we can bring awareness to eating disorders, disordered eating, like all these just, negative things that women don't have to go through. They don't have to go through what a lot of the things we went through to have a healthy relationship with their body and with food. So Thank you.
Yeah, of course. It was an honor to get to come on and talk to you. It's been a blast getting to know you through these now 2 interviews that we've done.
And we didn't even know that Casey had ties to Indianapolis. So that was just like cherry on top of us connecting. I posted actually about you on Instagram and somebody, oh my gosh, I have to go back. I can't remember who it was. They're like, oh my gosh, she was in my college something. Like they knew you. So it was hilarious.
No way. Maybe it was a sorority girl or something.
I'll have to go back and find, but so funny. So speaking of social media, if listeners have more questions, they want to connect with you, follow more of your positivity on social media, where is the best place to find you?
They can find me on Instagram. My handle is @KCMZav. And then I also host a podcast that releases weekly. So similar to this one, it's called How Do You Feel? And it's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and lots of other podcast platforms. But those are the two best ways right now to keep up with what's going on.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to put links to all of How to Find Casey in all the areas. And if you love Fit Friends Happy Hour, you will love How Do You Feel? Because just such a good message that needs to be heard. So thank you so much, Casey.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook @Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.